Hello, this is Friendly Jimmy's.
Can you hear this?
I don't think they can. Can you say something?
I'm scratching my dandruff.
Not your head.
Secret your sound.
Well, you're making it snow in my room, so thank you.
That's all right, man. Your room's kind of disgusting anyway.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. It's
got that... This is how you tell if a room's dirty or not. If there's a bunch of towels on the floor that are used, that's always the danger zone to me, because how much effort does it really take to put that up on a door handle?
But there are no towels on the floor.
Well, sorry, yeah, on a cupboard. I suppose it's hanging. All right, fair enough. Anyway, moving on.
Hey, what is
so the point is your room's immaculate, but it does constantly look like... Do you have a hobby where you take black and white photos and develop them yourself, Ali? There's no natural light in this room.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I rent this room. I didn't build this with my bare hands. This is how I got it.
No, I was under the impression that you did.
Well, too late, man. And I'm happy I've got a Coles basket in my room, though. It's very convenient. I do my laundry in it.
I do remember the day that you took that. I was very proud of you, Ali.
Why were you
more than when you graduated? I've seen you at your border and border, and I thought that is nowhere near as much as the day that you walked out with a Coles basket and said, "Do you think anyone will notice?" While walking out,
and no one
did. It was so lad.
You know what? It's I'm very thankful to them. If I could pay them, I won't. But. But I use it.
It's a victimless crime.
I use it a lot. And look, man, Kohl's turnover is $40 billion a year. I think they can do with that one basket, maybe.
Yeah, you got a good point.
And also,
I highly encourage everyone to steal as much as you possibly can from Kohl's, but not Woolworths, because they're clearly the better of the two.
Hey, I'm using this basket. Most lads just take the basket and then throw it into some river. And then when when there's a dry period in the summers, you can see bicycles, Coles trolleys, and baskets just underneath the river. I'm basically referring to the Holsworthy River next to my house.
If you're a kid from the country, what you do is you use it as a yabby trap.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And you're not doing that.
No, I'm not doing that. I'm basically doing what like most mums do, which is carry my laundry in it.
Mums don't do that.
What do they do then?
Mums can afford a basket from the $2 shop, Arlen.
Okay. All right, whatever. Let's move on to... So we're going to talk... Okay.
The big topics.
No, you've got to pronounce it because I forgot it because it's supposed to be said in a way. The first one.
Oh. The barbarians are at the gates and their leader is Alan Jones. This, of course, being the most important talking point in the media this week, which was TPP. No, that's nothing except for unless... Is it dividing Labour? Are they just as unsettled as a party that just replaced not one but two prime ministers in the span of a single term? Are they that unsettled?
Yeah.
That's the important point of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So now that Channel 9 News has covered that, we can move on to talking about the even bigger issue, which is that we can't put ads on the Opera House. It's not a billboard. It's a work of art.
You're saying that as if it is... Okay, I'm not saying that it's the biggest issue facing our country, but it's an issue.
You're right. The bigger issue here, which is, again, this is like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It just keeps going in circles and circles, and each circle is bigger than the last. The biggest... point of the Opera House is not that they were advertising, it's that they weren't able to fill up the horse race that they wanted to, which is why they had to do this in the first place.
No, like, look, it's the Opera House isn't a billboard, it's a work of art, and art shouldn't be used for commercial purposes, except
this
for this.
Amazing.
Please donate to Patreon.
Yeah, look, there's a moral imperative on you to do that, like there is for that woman to spend her entire life. Think about it. Her entire purpose on this planet is to make that single argument. That's what her whole life was leading towards.
But that's so unfair. That's her job. She is not an
economist.
Yeah, but
her job sucks.
Well, someone has to do it.
Why?
Well, you can't just abandon the Opera House.
I think it'd be better with logos of Hungry Jacks on it.
Why would it be better with...
It kind of looked like a bag of chips. Look, anyway. All right. Not that, but Zombrero Nachos.
Yeah, okay.
It could look like
finally
that.
A bit more class.
And common sense.
Common sense. No, but like, okay. Look, I know you hate people that live in Surry Hills and get a $120,000 a year job. It's for basically
such an annoying amount of money to earn. $120,000. It's such a level of money where it's you're not particularly skilled, you're not particularly talented, you're just well connected.
Yeah,
well, that's what that money indicates.
I understand, but someone's got to do it. And okay, I don't. Okay, first of all, gambling is an addiction.
Yeah.
That in itself is not a very good advertisement. If it was for, I don't know, like, even like the McGraw Foundation or something, I'd be like, okay, kind of makes sense, you know.
What about McGraw chips? I'm addicted to them.
That's the thing, mate. No one can deny that chips are mad.
What?
No,
I don't know what that point means.
It means that I'm not that into horse racing, but I am into chips, so maybe I'll allow the chips.
Right, okay.
No, look, man, yeah, that's what I'm, like, I don't want to freaking see horse racing adverts on, like, a cultural heritage.
Well, that's your opinion, Ali. My opinion You're is from that I didn't here. Go far I'm... enough. My opinion is that after, because this is the actual only mildly substantive point of this, and if this really was a stew, this would be one of those stews they serve in Auschwitz, where there's a one diced cube of beef at the bottom of something that's supposed to feed 50 prisoners. But that little cube is that Alan Jones got that woman on and then started berating her, as he should have, for being so defensive about an
He's
ad
just
being on
being
the
a operation. Bully. He was being a bully.
Yeah, but that's his job, and good on him. And he's good at it.
He is good at
it. And I like the fact that he looks like a parakeet. But that's just beside the point. The main point is that this woman was on, and then he goes, look, the point is that if I was Gladys Berejiklian, and I would have fired you. Which is great, because it really is the two subsections of people that keep the opera house going, and that's why I got so passionate, because the first subsection of people that get the opera house going is women who are in their 50s that are divorced but are rich.
Mm-hmm.
And the other subsection is closet homosexuals, which is what Alan Jones is.
Do you reckon?
Oh, he's a flaming queer.
Oh, for sure. Okay, my gaydar, as you know, is very off. But
That was amazing. There was these two men that we saw. I can't remember which town it was, but this week.
Geelong. What the hell?
They were perfectly tanned. Had really white teeth. Had this accent. They were calling each other catty nicknames and sitting there just being like, they said this, quote, "Oh, you're such a bitch," to the other one. And then afterwards, Ali turns to me and goes, are we going to go with them? And I said, "Nah, I'm pretty sure they just want to have an orgy with us." Because that's where it was motivating. He goes, "What? They were?"
I just thought...
They were gay?
Yeah, I couldn't... Okay, my gaydar is... I admit it. I grew up in a repressed society where if you came out as being gay, you died.
I suppose that would kind of hinder your gaydar a bit.
And because I didn't meet many gay people in my life.
Did
I mean,
you meet any?
I met one who... has now openly has come out of the closet
in Pakistan.
Yeah, brave man. But again, we lived in a bubble, so I guess he's not getting his head chopped off over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, you lived in Sydney in Pakistan.
Yeah, but also, dude, okay, apparently the fucking radicals, this is what they think should happen to gay people. They don't like, they don't chop their head off. They're like, what you're supposed to do with gay people is you're supposed to take them to a high position and then throw them off. It could be a building, it could be a mountain, whatever.
Why?
I don't know. That's what they think.
Why is that the holy way to do it?
I have
no
clue.
I love it how it's always these fringe members of society, witches, gay people. The only way you could kill them is to throw them off a tall
Yeah, something. Area. It's not. It's not a building or anything. It's just. It needs to be a high place.
But why?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I think.
Do they think gay people can fly?
Well, if they did, why would they throw them off a building?
Is it to prove that they're gay? Just like, their penis is so exercised it can act like a helicopter.
Yeah. Dude, imagine if they think that if they throw them off, they have wings, they'll fly away. And then if they fall down, splash on the ground, they're like, oh, maybe he wasn't gay. Tough luck.
Yeah, that's the test.
But the point
tough being, but fair.
The point
we should institute it here. That's what we're saying. Anyway, moving on.
The point being, my gaydar was is very off. And if someone told me, could you describe a heterosexual man, I would say Alan Jones. I don't understand how this is a funny thing. He's very
because he's
good at...
so flaming.
All right, okay, man.
When he goes on Q&A, he wears pink shirts. He wears really expensive suits. He has a lavender accent. He's really on the ball with Penny Wong. He really likes Penny Wong.
Yeah,
Penny
but
Wong's a lesbian.
No, I can differentiate between lesbians and dykes because of the haircut.
It's very observant of you, Ali.
All right, whatever, man. We've got to move on.
All right, the point is, what we're saying about this whole Opera House shenanigans is, no, you shouldn't be allowed to advertise gambling on it, but as a point of courtesy, because Alan Jones got 270,000 signatures saying that he should resign because he said someone else should resign, I completely don't agree. Keep doing what you're doing, Alan. But,
why? Why? Okay. Do you realize he's one of the major reasons why the Labour Party doesn't get elected?
Yeah.
Then why do you want him to be there? You're a confusing man.
Because he's funny.
But I still...
You don't understand. Look, this is how my view of the world is, right? I don't care if someone is a dictator. I don't care how repressive they are. I don't care how bad they are for the general population. Are they funny?
Okay, well...
You can agree with this.
No,
this is exactly what we're saying about Donald Trump. If it's not Bernie Sanders, I'm glad it's Donald Trump. Because he funny.
Okay,
President of laughs.
Alright, so... Okay, maybe...
Polis.
Maybe this is the point where we can... This ties into our next segment.
But look, just saying this. Put 2GB Breakfast with Alan Jones on the Opera House for a month.
No, the only advert that should be allowed on those sales is... The Friendly Jimmy's podcast.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say no to that, but I would feel really cheap not allowing Alan Jones, who is the most successful breakfast radio show on earth, to have a little more advertising.
I think Alan Jones's power is also overrated.
I don't think that. I think if anything, it's underrated. He talks mostly to bogans in Western suburbs. That's usually what every election boils down to, is Western suburb seats in Sydney. And he's talking to that guy for 3 hours a day. How is that not influential?
Do you know who's more influential than them? Super Wogs.
Yeah, but he never talks about politics. But if he did. Oh my God. We were saying this the other day. It was Super Wog. If he just embraced the Australian flag a little more, he'd be Prime Minister longer than Bob Hawke was.
And that's not even a joke. I think if someone with some sort of ethnic flavor, but can also demonstrate that they're somewhat patriotic, would be able to become the Prime Minister. If not the Prime Minister, at least a very popular politician.
The slogan writes itself as well. He just writes like, I fucking love Australia. He'll win.
Yeah.
Landslide.
Yeah, because most people in Cronulla love Super Wog as much as people in Lakemba.
And Wogs love Super Wog.
Wogs
and
love
Wogs
Super
don't like anything when it comes to politics. They always have that view of like, man, they're all scum. Except for the guy that kind of has the same last name as me and is a little bit related to me.
Wait,
he's pretty mad.
The guy whose name's Jihad.
Jihad.
No, what was his name? I'm pretty sure that was his name.
No, I'm talking about those, you know, those Dodge Labour New South Wales parliamentarians that everyone knew were extremely corrupt, and then ICAC came out and they were even more corrupt than we imagined.
Or like Eddie Obeid or someone.
Yeah, something like that. They're always just like, no, don't fuck with Eddie, he's alright. Like, Maurice Yema, yes.
Yeah, okay, okay. So now, man, maybe I could be the leader of WOGS. I just need to have that accent and I need to, I guess, be into Lebanese food.
Yeah, and make this your slogan. I want to put a Taliban on the Taliban.
Like even television.
You'll win, dude. That's how much you hate Islam. You're waging a holy war against it using its own verses.
I don't think I'll be able to capture that audience. They'll very soon realize that I hate Allah. And then, yeah, they wouldn't be too keen on it. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if they're enough to win an election in Australia yet.
I've ruined my political career.
Give them a couple of years.
I've said too much shit. Okay. Who make me laugh the most?
I forgot.
Yeah, that's the suggestion.
That was pretty much the last segment.
No, I changed it because the last one is something even better, which I'm not going to get into now. They'll find out. But anyways, we're going to talk. I'll have to say who my favorite comedian is.
And I'll say it at exactly the same time. So everyone at home knows that we haven't talked about this beforehand. All right? I'm not lying to you. That's exactly what happened. You can trust old friendly Geordies, a man who chose that name when he was 14, was regretting it from about 24 to 28, and now I find it funny yet again. Sunrise, sunset.
All right, okay. One, two, three.
Rodney Joan Rude.
Rivers.
Who? Joan Rivers.
That... Dude, she was actually very funny. She made me laugh heaps, but it's not true. I'm kind of afraid to say who my favorite comedian is, man.
It's fucking Russell Peters, isn't it?
No. Hey, that's racist.
But I think he did actually come up with the greatest joke of all time. I think everyone could agree on that. That
be a man, do the right thing.
No one's ever gonna beat that.
Actually, that is a very good joke. No, but because like the last time, because man, every time I tell people this, they kind of get like pissed off at me. It's Louis C.K. Man, that guy's made me laugh more than anyone else.
Really?
Yeah, he's my favorite fucking comedian.
No, you shouldn't be shamed for that. No one should be shamed for that. If Louis C.K. masturbated in front of me, I'd see it as an honor.
Man.
And I'd try and catch the semen in my mouth, even though he'd probably be trying to shoot it away from me.
He didn't force
anyone.
He'd
be like the bodyguard, but I'd be like, no. Salty.
Dude, he didn't force anyone to watch him masturbate. He basically just said, do you want
to... Yeah, but it's about the power of it. Dude, I've been in those situations before in the modeling world. You know what? I just decided that I don't want to get a Calvin Klein ad that much. And I walked out of the room.
Really?
Yeah.
You faced casting couch.
Yeah, I faced casting couch. And here's what you do. You say no thanks and you leave. My girlfriend, who's becoming an actress now, same things happened to her. You know what she said? No.
What happened?
Dude, look, George Bush Sr.'s wife was right. Just say no, kids. It's that easy. I'm sick of this bullshit mollycoddled society where it's like, oh my God, Louis C.K. knew what he was doing in that situation. He wasn't just horny. He was just asking a chick and then she said yes. And then like years later after it just became trendy in the media so, she said that she was a victim. Fuck off.
The last time we got into this conversation, it didn't turn out too well.
Yeah, well, anyone who disagrees with me is a baby. But continue to give me money. More money. More!
Look, man, it's like, you know...
No, but it's true. I stand by that conviction entirely.
No, look...
Having been a victim of sexual assault in that kind of, you know, context, right? I've been in that exact scenario. What? It's very easy to... Like, is fame really worth that? If it is to you, mad. But if it isn't, just don't do it. Simple.
No one's ever sexually assaulted me. I'm not pretty enough.
No. It's all right, Ali. I'll grab your cock.
Yay.
Okay. Yay.
No, look, okay. Yeah, Louis C.K. is okay. If nothing, at least Jordan just touched my titty. He grabbed it. Oh my God. Okay, fine. One
this,
thing
this
off.
This pod just got darker and darker just then, didn't
you,
it?
You didn't.
We just went from like the most controversial topic we've ever said, and then we pushed it even further.
Okay, so what? You didn't even give me an opportunity to say no.
Yeah, exactly. I just sexually assaulted my co-host.
So now your theory is disproven. There are times when you can't say no.
Yeah, no. I'm not saying there's times where you can't say no. I'm saying that when someone says to you, "Do you want to have sex with me?" and they're, quote, in a position of power, you should be able to be enough of an adult to say, "Nah, that's okay."
But the thing with Louis C.K. was he didn't even say that. He just said, "Would you like to see me masturbate?" Which is a bizarre thing to say. But just, okay, here's the thing. A lot of people, there's about 7 billion people on this in this world. Some of them are really weird. And that's not enough of a reason to shun someone, especially if they're that talented.
Yeah, I know. Look, this is the problem. What is this? We let Michael Jackson get away with touching two kids.
Hey, that
I
was,
still like his music, man.
That was. Tell me that you don't start moving as soon as you hear a Michael Jackson song. Even the shit ones. He fondled with kids. You should be ashamed of yourself for moving, but you still do. Because
checkmate.
Art and artist are...
Yeah, it's just a media beat-up. This is it. It's how the media frames it. And then everyone goes, oh my God, you can't say it that way. But how is what Louis C.K. did anywhere near as bad as pedophilia?
But then again, Michael Jackson... We don't know if Michael Jackson did it because he got acquitted. The court decided that he was not guilty.
Yeah, I know that. But having said that, Dave Chappelle summed it up so well, which, you know, second favorite comedian of all time to Rodney Rood, of course. But... he summed it up so well when he just said that when someone goes to him and says, do you think that Michael Jackson touched those kids? Oh, man. That guy wrote Thriller, man. Thriller. So, would you let your children stay with Michael Jackson overnight? Fuck no, man.
No, but didn't he, like, in his latest stand-up say that something like, oh... man, Michael Jackson didn't phone with those kids, man. He was just showing them around. He was like, you want to see this Ferris wheel? You want to see Home Alone?
Yeah. That was one of the best things. And I highly recommend that you watch out for Birdman Prophecies. But this is turning into the most hipster conversation ever. Have you seen Stand Up on Netflix? It's so good. But let's make this slightly less hipster. Have you fucking heard Rodney Rood? Have you bought one of his CDs at a truck stop along a BP on the way up to Coffs Harbour once? Because he is fucking piss funny.
Actually, here's the thing. I feel extremely Aussie for knowing who Rodney Rood is.
Thank you. That's an initiation. It should have been on your test. Who's Rodney Rood and is he funny?
Fuck the parliamentary system. What's Westminster system? Rodney Rood's where it's at. Okay,
yeah, whatever he says goes.
If someone calls Scoopy, you don't know what Scoopy is, do you?
That's how Aussie he is. He didn't know how to pronounce Schweppes, so he used to pronounce it Scoopies.
Until this day...
Because it kind of sounds like schooner, I guess.
Until this day, I call him Scoopies. He is actually very, very funny. I think he is... the best Australian comedian to have existed.
I think he's the best comedian on the planet. You know why? Because he's a demon. He's essentially a demon on stage. And he's enticing you to laugh with black magic.
Why don't more people know about it? Most people don't know about it.
Because everyone always goes, oh, I'm so above him. I'm so much more cultured that, you know, I like comedians that basically Comedy Central tells me to like. Key and Peele. Fuck off. They're not even like half of Dave Chappelle each, are they? No. They're like combined about as funny as 1/8 of Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, and Dave Chappelle hates them because they're like, good. She in that show every day is like, God damn, those are my jokes, man. They just took my show.
But I think the thing with Rodney Rood is everyone thinks they're above him. But what they don't understand is the best humor is lowbrow. And anybody who thinks that they're above lowbrow... is actually just not a fun person, and they're a snob.
Yeah, and also, case in point, we keep mentioning Dave Chappelle, because he clearly is, he's one of the prophets in the Bible, right, of comedy Bible. And he, dude, all of his comedy is really dumb, if you think about it. Yes.
I'm sick of people saying that he's an intellectual comedian. No, he's not. You could maybe qualify someone like George Carlin or Chris Rock, but again,
Chris Rock is not an intellectual comedian.
I know, like, but he's smarter than Dave Chappelle.
I don't know, man.
Dave Chappelle's an idiot, and that's what's funny. When he tries to be smart, it's annoying.
Yeah. Well, because he's...
The only one that's actually funny while they're smart is actually Bill Maher and Jon Stewart. That's it.
Yeah, and George Carlin, too. George Carlin was a fucking beast.
He never made me laugh. I always just sat there going, yeah, damn right. He basically should have been that union guy in that ad from John Howe's last term of going, we're coming back. And he would have been sick at that.
Yeah, okay. He never made me laugh out loud the way Chappelle has several times, but I am very, very entertained when I watch George Carlin stand-ups.
Yeah, agreed.
But anyway, agreed. No, but okay, here's the other thing, mate. Did you know that Rodney Rood was a charlatan?
What does that mean? Dude, I mean, like, sorry, but let's go on after the definition of a charlatan. Sorry. But no, what do you mean by that?
He wasn't a dumb Aussie country bogan. He was a rich Jewish kid.
No. How do you know that?
I'm pretty sure someone... Okay. I think someone told me this. It might not be correct.
Incredible. Because the only story that I know about him before he was famous was he used to stand on the hood of his car. He used to live in Bathurst, and he waited until primary school ended. As if this isn't worse than what Louis C.K. did. He used to stand on his hood of his bonnet, wait until school finished. When people were leaving to go to pick up their kids and whatever, he'd be standing there being like, tell you what, trendsetters, I was having checked with a horse the other day. To a bunch of kids, just trying out his material on them. And every time the kids would go, ah, ha, ha, he knew he was on a winner.
Yeah,
that's a good comedian.
That's definitely a good comedian. But I'm not 100% sure about this, but I am fairly confident that he was actually kind of, he came from an educated family, and he was sort of upper middle class-ish.
Well, he does look exactly like, you know anyone who has that really anti-Semitic picture that comments on YouTube? And it's that caricature of a Jew kind of rubbing his rat-like little hand. He looks exactly like that, so he probably is a Jew.
That is more offensive than, I don't know, like a swastika or something, don't you reckon?
That's just so much meaner.
It's so much meaner, because he goes right in and... Yeah, because swastika is so obviously racist that it ceases to be racist. But whereas, like, when it's something, it's like, you know, it's quite remarkable how perceptive it is that it makes it even worse.
The kernel of truth.
The kernel of truth. But yeah, Rodney Rood is mad, actually. And I am... I don't know how famous he is. Is he more famous than... Because I imagine him to be a great comedian that no one knows anything about. But do most Australians know about Rodney Rood?
That's a good question. And I fear the Generation Y doesn't know about him. Which is... He's our Abraham. He parted the seas of the ABC's mediocrity and crapness. And
that's actually Moses, but still.
That guy. The guy that God liked heaps.
All of them. Except for Muhammad, who he thought was a bit of a bitch.
He didn't like his own son.
The point is,
I think that the older generations know who Rodney Rood is, and I think it's mostly because of Bert Newton Tonight. All credit to him. He used to put Rodney Rood on, and there was this running joke that they had. This is when Tonight shows actually had funny comedians hosting them. He said, oh no, Rodney Rood's on again. How? What are we going to do? He's so rude. And he...
Worked for me.
And he'd get on. And he'd perform the most unoffensive, sweet joke you've ever heard. And that was the shtick every few months. Beautiful.
What, so he wouldn't do his bangers? which were almost always kind of offensive.
The joke was that he'd be leading towards something that sounded like it was going to be extremely offensive. And then he'd veer off at the last minute and be like, shall I shant her on her way with some cookies, you know?
Is Bert Newton like Australian Johnny Carson?
Graham Norton is Australian Johnny Carson. Bert Newton is Australia's Jay Leno.
Wait, Graham Norton is Australian? Graham Norton is not Australian.
Oh, sorry. Graham Kennedy.
Oh, okay.
My mistake.
Yeah, no, because I was...
turning into such an old man. Talking about TV that was on 30 years ago.
No, but I actually quite enjoy these conversations because I feel like I've missed out.
It is better than talking about Battlefield Earth, isn't it?
Yeah, sorry, yeah. No, because I don't know what... I don't know. Well, obviously the audience would... I can vouch for something. Jordan is a treasure trove of obscure Australian trivia of TV.
I'm a connoisseur of shit Australian celebrities.
Yes, yeah, that's a better way to put it. And
my wine tasting.
And I completely lack any knowledge of it. In fact, if I didn't know who, if I hadn't met Jordan, I think my favorite comedian would be Russell Peters.
But now that you've met me, you've seen that even Grant Denyer is funnier than Russell Peters.
Yeah, Grant Denyer. That's saying something. Grant Denyer anger. But you know, I feel bad for Russell Peters. I've seen some of his recent podcasts and like his interviews, and he's just like, at this point, he's just saying, I know I'm not a good comedian. I'm just a broad comic who got lucky.
And he goes, no.
Yeah, and then I was like, oh man, that's kind of sad. It's true.
Can't hate on him too much.
But then.
And again, he struck gold with Be a Man.
Yeah, he still go with being a man. You know what he did? He just catered to an audience that no one had actually catered to before.
Mm.
And it's that, you know, like that Uber driver that we met, that Zimbabwean / Indian Uber driver who was extremely enthusiastic. Mm. What was he saying? He's like, so he was asking, so what do you do? He was asking Jordan, what do you do? And I was like, he's a comedian. He's a celebrity. And then he was like, oh, this is what you do. What you do is you make Asian accent and you will be famous.
And he's not wrong.
He's not wrong, because that's what appeals to him. And because Asian or Indian or whatever, it's like you make fun of Indian.
Oh,
accent.
Let's be honest, it appeals to us all.
It appeals to us all, but like it really, really appeals to people.
This is what you learn after a while. Is honestly the best humor is just extremely slack. And the more slack you are, the better a comedian you are. Mm-hmm. Full stop. That's the key to comedy.
And you know what?
Anyone that walks up to me afterwards, like, oh, I want to go and do stand up. Be extremely offensive.
And the thing is, it's not even that offensive. Like, a lot of white comedians ask Russell Peters, how come you don't get into trouble for doing all of these accents? And he says that.
Oh, I think we know. But what? Because anyway. He's Indian.
No, like even like the Asian accent.
Yeah, again, because he's Indian.
Well, according to him, it's because like, okay, first of all, a lot of people that think that shit's offensive are white.
I know.
Right? So
it's hipsters. Those are the only people that are offended by this, but they have a clench hold on the media, so they tell everyone else that it's offensive.
What Asian people really like about that is that for like someone talking about them, it gives you self-importance. That, oh, and, you know, someone's, like, trying to understand my world. And secondly, yeah. He said, like, according to Russell Peters, he's like, I do them well. Because if it's a generic sort of an Asian accent, then it doesn't work. He's like, some Asian would come up to me after the show. He's like, oh, my God, that Hong Kong accent was spot on. And he goes, so, like...
You're not bad at it yourself, Ali. You should consider a career where you walk around and your name is like Ching Chong Charlie.
Ching Chong Charlie.
It'll go down a treat.
Yeah, Muslim Ching Chong Charlie.
Yeah, that's the one.
I cover all bases, you know, just so I don't get into trouble. But yeah, but anyways, like, so... Yeah,
but the thing is, I think you're absolutely right. I've never seen a race that likes being paid out more than Asians. Asians really like being made fun of.
Dude, I think everyone kind of likes being made fun of. Like, it's what gives us joy in life, you see?
I don't know. I think... Look, I'm going to speak as a white person. I find it personally offensive.
What? Okay.
When people make fun of white people.
No, okay.
No, but you know what? The difference is now, as in... And actually, you know what? To this day, not... not like annoyed or offended by it when it's like Dave Chappelle, but just the fact that it's other white people. And the difference is that, like, when a black guy is making fun of black people, he's like, you see, man, think about black people. We're so cheap, man. He's saying it from a place of love.
Yeah.
But the white guy, the white comedians that do it, it's like, dude, you're doing that because you saw some piece of shit on BuzzFeed do that. That is a gross place to be. You aspire to be the guy with glasses on BuzzFeed.
Do you think that... So what you're basically saying is that you can almost see where someone's coming from while they're doing their stand-up act. And that's what will make you feel, if you hate it or if you don't hate it, right?
I think that's it.
But is that coming from your own bias? Or do you think it's almost like you can see through it?
I think I can sense it. Especially when I do stand-up shows, the really offensive jokes that I have in my thing, right? Like when act... thing.
Yeah. Don't you do this Jordan's for a living?
Jordan's vocab.
Yeah. I've read 1,000 books on comedy, but I could not remember what act is. And this is true. This man has read a library on comedy. But anyways, yeah.
I'm a scholar in the comedic arts.
You actually are.
I'm a scholar in the happy part of the drama piece. But the part where it goes, don't know a thing about that, not interested. But what you see every time when you deliver those jokes... is that if you're remotely fearful of it, it's not going to work. And I think that's why I hate watching hipster comedians sit there and go, white people, because you can see the fear in their eyes, because it's not coming from a place of genuine observation about white people. It's coming from a place of, it's trendy to make fun of white people at the moment, so I'm going to get on a bandwagon too, but oh my God, I see that like people aren't laughing and now I'm scared. Man, don't be a stand-up comedian. Can you just get one of those bullshit office jobs where you just say your little turn in a meeting and you just bloviate and then everyone goes, well, I don't know what they said, so we'll continue giving them $60,000 a year. That's what your role in life is, all right?
You know what it
is? Work at an ad, push forward beer ads where there's a fucking guy with a beard and you think that's the funniest thing on the planet.
And you know, because it is the, like, most people don't recognize this, but this is the exact equivalent of, like, how, like, people of color were made fun of in the 70s, right? Which was like rudimentary understanding of them, basing it just like, oh, thank you, come again, or some shit like that, right? It's the same thing happening with white people now, which is that the jokes are actually not, as you said, they don't come from a source of observation, but from what's trendy at the moment to say.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You know what it is? It's not even that. You're right. Now that I think about it, the only thing that actually truly is offensive about comedy is lazy comedy.
Lazy comedy. But you know what?
That's okay. It.
I figured something out, man. Actually, I think I've nailed this one. You know how... Okay, I know Louis C.K. is now in trouble, but he's not in trouble for all the jokes he did. It was like his extracurriculars that got in trouble. But if you actually listen to his stand-up, or just watch his stand-up, you watch all of his shit, he says extremely offensive shit. But he never gets into trouble. And I spent hours trying to understand how this guy doesn't get into trouble, and I think I figured it out.
Yeah.
So what he does is, in fact, take some tips, mate. I know you know a lot about comedy, but I watched Louis C.K. maybe 25 times. So what he does is,
go on.
He first off makes his intentions clear that he's on the side of left wing SJWs, politically correctness, and then he says offensive shit. It nullifies it. So I'll give you an example. So one of my favorite jokes about... one of my favorite Louis C.K. jokes is that he starts off saying how black people have been fucked over, right? So he says, white people every year erase 100 years from... 100 years of slavery. They go like, slavery... Oh, no, increase 100 years. It's like, slavery happened 700 years ago. And then he goes like, no, it really didn't. It happened 140 years ago. That's 2 70-year-old ladies back to back, and before that, you could own a black guy, right? So what he's doing is he's making his intentions clear that he's very empathetic towards the black community. He goes on to say, like, you know, he keeps saying like how they've been fucked over, how life shit for them, and then he at the end he goes, But you know, white people have faced some issues too. Like the time they took all our slaves. That was pretty shitty. Like, fuck you, I'm used to that shit. So what he does is, it's not offensive, because he spent like the last 10 minutes of his build up trying to make his intentions clear. So you assume that he's coming from the right place. So when he says extremely offensive shit, you don't mind it.
I think you're right, man. Well, that's definitely how he cushions it. He's put up the pretext that... You're right. He's making it very obvious to the dumbasses in the audience that he's on their side. So anything after that is seen as just a joke, and which it should be seen as anyway.
Anyways, yeah, but like, you have to do it.
I know you have to. Well, you know what? That's why I like Bill Burr more than I like Louis C.K. And it's because he does the exact opposite of that.
Yeah,
he starts off with the really offensive part.
Yes, he does that. But that's a risky game. That could go either way. The thing is, he's so good at it that he manages to, like, sort of... He saves himself at the end. Because he manages to convince you. Because he'll say, like, he'll start off with, like, there's an epidemic of gold-digging whores in this country. Mm. And you go, like, oh, fuck, calm the fuck down. But then he spends, like, the next 20 minutes cushioning it by, like, explaining in what context he means that... How there is a fucking, you know, epidemic of gold digging whores out there. Because there is an epidemic of gold digging whores out there.
I think it's a great way to go about it. Tammy, it's just not as pussy. I'm not saying that Louis C.K. is a pussy. He obviously says really offensive things.
No, and he...
And actually, maybe it's better because the payoff is at the end, but...
Yeah.
It's just a style thing. I do really admire the balls of walking on stage to a crowd fundraiser in California and saying... I'm sick of Obama's wife.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I guess... sick of Obama's wife. Yeah. In the fucking audience that has Martha Stewart. it's intense. But that's why you respect him too. But, you know... I think it would be safer to follow Louis C.K.'s model than Bill Burr's. Because with Louis C.K.'s model, I think you get more sort of space to say even more offensive shit compared to Bill Burr.
It's a more tactical and tactful way of doing it.
Yeah, it's a
more... I agree. Personally, though, what I've realized with my comedy... When I go up on stage, so good comparing yourself to Bill Burr and Louis C.K. This is how you do it, guys.
Hey, man, I'm not even in comedy, but I'm still doing this shit. Whatever. I can hold a conversation.
What I've noticed, this is the way that I think you do it. I think that you start off with something that's fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say something that's more fucked up. And then you say something that's even more fucked up than that.
Yeah.
And that's how you win.
No, but...
That is how you win. You just keep pushing the envelope until the audience laughs. And you know where I think I learned that from? Rodney Rood.
Yeah,
that's why he's the best comedian.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. All right, so it all ties back in. He does do that shit, but do you reckon, and this might sound harsh, mate, but we're having a heart-to-heart here. Do you reckon that you won't be fucking famous for that reason?
Oh, absolutely. That's the reason that he wasn't.
Yeah, exactly, right? So there's a bit case in point.
Look, he made a great career for himself. He was the first of the real internet comedians. Like, all these people like Frenchie, Shooter Williamson. I mean, I'm a fan of them, but they're not Rodney Rood's asshole. They're nothing to this guy. I'm nothing to Rodney Rood. I honestly think no one in this planet is close to Rodney Rood. And I think that if you're able to make like a sick living out of it, which he did, he made a lot of money touring in pubs and RSLs.
Mm.
He showed a way forward. If you follow Rodney Rood and you learn the techniques from him, you're going to be a better comedian as a result. And he pioneered that. As like this leb comedian that followed him that was, I think, on like Fat Pizza or something. He goes, mate, Rodney Rood wrote the rules and then he broke all the rules in front of us. He's fucking crazy. That's what he was saying about it. And he's right. He did. He invented new rules for comedy and then broke them.
Mm.
He was a genius.
But he will always remain a comedian's comedian.
True. True. And that's where the glory is.
It's where the glory is, but for a very small group of people. And they are, look, what you basically are, you're an academic. Rodney Roode is an academic, which is crazy, considering he's
the Noam Chomsky of making yuck yucks.
No, but he's not even the Noam Chomsky. He's one of those academics that
Chomsky likes.
That Noam Chomsky likes.
Damn, that Pakistani dude.
Yeah. Holy shit. That Pakistani dude, for instance. Or someone like, I don't know, like, okay, so for instance, like, I remember I was listening to one of these interviews of Chomsky, and he happened to mention this guy called Anatole Levin. And I was like, who the fuck is this guy? And who's supposed to be an expert on South Asian policy? And man, I got into this guy. This man is like a genius. No one knows about him. He should be on every channel because he's one of the smartest cunts you'll ever see. Chomsky is a fan of this guy.
Right.
But the thing is, he'll only be known in that field. He will never have a greater appeal for that reason. Mm. Rodney Roode is the same. He's the furthest thing from an academic, but for a comedian, he's an academic.
Mm.
So you've got to choose that life. Do you want to be Rodney Roode, or do you want to be like a Trevor Noah or some shit?
Rodney Roode. Hands down. That's the aspirational thing to do, because Trevor Noah doesn't fucking tread any new path. He's just a cheap shit copy of John Stewart that's like got an annoying South African accent. I mean, dude, you guys are funny when you're not trying to be funny. When you're trying to be funny, it's like your voice just sounds like you're clicking.
Look,
you don't sound like you're talking English.
But what I'm saying is, I'm not a big fan of Trevor Noah either, but I will say one thing. Trevor Noah is a smart cunt. But he chooses to follow a different path to success, is what I'm saying.
No, because he's a fucking rules follower. He's not a rules maker. Someone has to break the mold. I'm not saying that I'm breaking the mold in any stretch of the imagination, but my eventual aspiration is to be a 50-year-old dude that goes around in RSLs and makes bogans laugh and makes them laugh in a way that was not previously invented. That is glory. There's no fucking glory in getting up and being an even shitter version of fucking Stephen Colbert.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you know? I understand that. But you should know that when you're aiming for the top, the likelihood of falling to the bottom is higher than someone who's sort of aiming for like the middle floor, you know?
Oh, absolutely. You're right. You're 100% right.
But, so that's why Rodney Roode is mad. But so is Louis C.K., man.
He is another comedian's comedian.
Well, that's the thing. He definitely is. Louis C.K. was never famous until very recently. He's been doing comedy for ages because every comedian knew about Louis C.K.
Right.
Every comedian knew about Louis C.K. because he was a comedian's comedian as well.
And the same with Doug Stanhope.
Yeah, same with Doug Stanhope.
Bill Burr, I would say he's now huge and global.
Yeah.
Well, again, he was doing it for 20 years.
Yeah, he was. I think if you're a comedian, you kind of have to do it for that long.
Mm.
It takes a. This is the other thing that these guys talk about. Like these. I think it was. you're in a leftist. It was Ray Romano who was saying this.
I'm a huge fan already. How could I even forget? I'm sorry. It goes Rodney Roode, Ray Romano, Dave Chappelle.
He reckons. That you can't be funny until you hit 40.
He's right.
In fact, he says the golden period of being a funny comedian is your 50s, because you've just reached that point where you just don't give a fuck anymore.
Yep.
And that's where your comedy gold is.
Yep.
Which is why I think like someone like Bill Burr became famous at age 44 or some shit. And so did Louis C.K. These are old motherfuckers and they've been doing it.
That's a comedian's version of being 28 and a runner.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. So there, that's the comedian's version of being 27 years old. But okay, so this has become the Marc Maron podcast at this point.
Is that all it does? I've never listened to a Marc Maron podcast, but I can imagine the reason this guy's funny.
Yeah, no, but it ought to be. Marc Maron's also one of those people. It's lucky that he got into that WTF podcasting thing, because he was also a comedian that other comedians knew about, but no one else did until he started doing that podcast. And then Obama appeared on it. Yeah,
and people still shouldn't, because he's shit.
Yeah, that's the... And you know what? Same thing with Marc Maron. Like Rodney Roode, people assume that he's some like, yeah, you were born in Brooklyn in like, you know, in the white ghetto, and he's a kid of a doctor. He's like,
It's obvious. I don't even know why I believe the original story now. He looks like that.
Yeah. And, well, Yeah, Mark Maron, I don't think Mark Maron is a great comedian. Mark Maron's all right. He's just got a lot of experience, so he knows how to formulate a joke.
Not good enough.
Okay, well, yeah, look, I mean,
you can read that in a book.
Yeah, by no means. Anyways, but what I'm going to say is, Louis C.K., Dave Chappelle, George Carlin, Bill Burr.
It's a pretty controversial list, I've got to say. Bill Burr is fourth.
I think.
Especially because I'm pretty sure it's just you. It'd be every other man on the planet that'd be like, Bill Burr number one. And then every chick would go, neck him, he's mean.
Yeah. But
I wonder what women are. Look, just if you're one of the two Amy women that Schumer. Listen. Yeah, okay. if that is, then just please knock off and don't listen to this podcast. I'm perfectly happy with one woman listening to it. If that's the scenario, please give us your list. Oh my god. Number one, Judith Lucer.
What, you don't ever, you know who it was?
Who's so, fucking, my vagina.
In fact, I was actually talking to this Aussie chick from Campbelltown, and she was arguing with me and my brother that, because my brother's kind of sexist. I'll just come up and say it.
Your brother is Pakistani Bill Burr.
Yeah, he is Pakistani Bill Burr. And like,
he's a dumb, smart man.
I try.
He does not read at all, but he still, for some reason, has pretty interesting perspectives. But they're always so scientifically off the mark. But if he was in the Middle Ages, he would be a scholar.
Yeah, he would be. He'd be the king's. He'd be the king's scientist.
Nobleman.
But he was. So my brother has this opinion that women can't do two things. They can't be comedians. They can't be comedians, and they can't be rappers. And so his Bogan Campbelltown friend was arguing with him, and I was there, that some women are very funny. And he goes like, okay, like very much like, name me one comedian that's funny and he's got a veg. And she says, Kitty Flanagan.
Checkmate.
And then my brother spends about 2 days watching Kitty Flanagan shit, because he does take it seriously. If someone gives him a recommendation, he takes it seriously and he watches like for 2 days, and he comes.
He always does. He's more than fair. Yeah, he's fair to a fault.
And he goes like, "She's fucking shit." Like,
I love how he goes into deep research about really inane things.
Yeah, and there's another one which I don't know if we could even talk about it.
But you know what? Actually, I will say this. I'm really highly of the opinion as well that most female comedians are really bad. But I have seen some that are good. And one of them is Joan Rivers.
Joan Rivers is very funny. She's hilarious. She's very funny.
But the thing is, why is she hilarious? Because she's not... She's a drag queen.
Well, she's not. She's a woman. She just
is a woman, but she's just basically a catty gay man.
Yeah, yeah, true, true, true.
I think this is what we've come to the conclusion of. We were talking about this before. Just on average, there's variants of this, and actually I come across heaps of funny women all the time, and I come across really unfunny guys constantly. But on average, it would go, women are the least funny, guys are the second most funny, gay men are the funniest people in society.
Gay men are... Well, once...
And extra points if you're a black gay man.
What, like,
if you are a fag hag,
yeah,
you've hit diamond on that. That's platinum. That's platinum level fag. That's the one that you want to hold on to for the rest of your life.
Yeah,
gay black man.
I had this.
It would be. I'd never leave the house. I'd just be one of those sultans that's just like, more,
please. Gay men can be, in fact, mostly are very funny, and I think it's because. You know how they say fat people are funny? Because fat people have always had to keep humor as a defense mechanism. Because you're constantly afraid of being paid out or somehow being put down or being bullied or some shit. So they need to be quick on their tip. That's why, like...
But actually, can you just explain this to me as well? Like, go back to that point, but just while we're talking about fatties. Why are fatties so good at radio? I need to know that.
maybe because, like, yeah, they're just, because, you know, they can't be shit at it. Because if they are, then they go really, look, we're all social animals, right? And we need to be able to somehow live in this world and be social enough. And because when you're running with a huge handicap, then it just sort of forces you to be better at it, right? So, for example, like a sports person gets better when they get intense competition. These guys are getting constant competition, like someone's always testing them, and then they have to come up with good comebacks, or they're gonna just be losers. And the same
that's
thing,
awesome. They're training with weights.
Yeah, exactly. they're both literally and figuratively, they're training with weights.
Incredible.
And same, I think it applies to gay people as well.
I think so as well, because it's you know what it is? Locker rooms from years 9 to 12. That's what makes gay guys funny.
Mm. Look, but
because
you know
they have to traverse this line of hide, because naturally a gay guy is a sissy. So first of all, they're going to be picked on mercilessly in a locker room. So they have to know when they're supposed to take the joke and be self-deprecating, and when to be a sassy bitch in return.
Yeah,
they got to know that line.
And they obviously, with practice, they get really better at it. And the thing is, what it's not just for comedy. I mean, they again, like, because of that sort of intense training throughout their life, they can be funny, but they can go into any profession and succeed. Like, they could become the CEO of Apple or something.
More socially intelligent.
They become really socially intelligent.
They're not necessarily, like, academically intelligent. That's the realm of losers that have no social skills. But
no,
the grease that makes
not
networking
academic
work.
Look, I think I genuinely believe that if you are a CEO of a big company, being a nerd in itself is not enough. Like, you still need to have certain skills of being able to deal with people. You're a fucking boss manager. You need to understand how to manage people, and all of those people that you manage are not going to be the same. If you're only dealing with nerds, maybe that's easy. But if you're dealing with, you know, like your sales head, who cannot be a nerd just by the sheer nature of their job, you need to be able to motivate them enough that they work for you. I just think that what I'm basically trying to say is this whole new 21st century of idea of being nice to gay people is doing them a disservice.
It's so true. No, bully them harder.
No, please don't bully them harder.
No. Identify them. Put some kind of color around them that they have to wear constantly so that you know that you're allowed to be mean to these people. It's making the world a better place. It is. It truly is. It's Gavin McInnes' point of bullies are overrated. Bullies make the Steve Jobs of the world. You know, underrated. Sorry, underrated. I don't want to misquote him.
In a bizarre way, that's kind of true.
No, it is. It definitely is. Because they teach you either to sit in your basement and cry about how much of a victim you are, or they teach you to auto-correct yourself and make your autism less obvious.
Okay, in a more politically correct way, what you can't... Like, okay, I truly believe this. If you've got siblings, you have better social skills, particularly if you've got older siblings. Because what happens is every day someone tells you that you're fucking stupid, or you're doing this wrong, or you're doing that wrong. If you're the only kid and your parents are really goody-two-shoes, unless you've got like kind of cunty parents that are like, "Matt, you're full of fucking shit," then you just won't develop those social skills to be able to sort of self-heal, rectify where you're... You won't develop certain analytical tools because you'll think anything that you're doing is good.
Mm.
If you've got older siblings, they'll put you in your place immediately, and that's critical when you're a kid. And
it does.
Bullies perform the same function.
It forwards you so many hurdles instantly.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Okay,
I'm really glad about that, but this podcast is coming to an end,
no,
so we really need
one
to get
last,
to.
But we want to do one last segment, which is because I think this would be the best way to finish this podcast. You want to hear something funny?
This is incredible. We're just talking about comedians this whole time, but we forgot to factor in the greatest comedian of all time, the comedian's comedian, in that literally. The only people who know this guy exists is a couple of comedians. No one else knows.
Yeah, no one knows.
But the Dome Kang.
The Dome Kang.
I gotta tell you guys, I can't believe this slipped in my mind. for how many podcasts are we in? This is shameful on me. This is an indictment.
This is the 420th. Let's blaze up.
I really need. That's amazing if it is. It's but, not. Yes, of course who it's knows? Not, but we've still. Don't count. Tell me we're going to have to do it now. But, yeah, a nun really needs to come in here and smack me with a ruler. I've sinned. I've truly sinned not telling you people about the time the Dome Kang was in an orgy.
Woo, special. Now,
this is what happened. The Dome Kang was staying at my house for 4 days straight because he was trying to convince his parents that he had a job.
Jeez. Dude, okay. The Dome Kang tends to do that shit all the time.
Yes.
He stayed at my house for like 10, 15 days. That is his
job,
straight.
Convincing his parents that he has a job.
Yeah. And then his mum would be pissed off at me that you're making my kid do a lot of work when he was basically just punching bongs that I was financing. But yeah, anyways.
And
you
were really high. Yeah. And had to try and come up with a cover story at the same time, which I will say.
No, I wasn't.
You are a master. You're a mage of the bong, Ali. Yeah. That is your potion spell.
Days of the future past. But anyways. So it's a real shame. He's living at your house.
Magic everywhere. yeah, so he was living in my house for 4 days straight, which is pretty much what the Dome Kang does. It really is. Him coming to your house is like that sludge monster from Spirited Away going into the bath. That's what happens.
Yeah, yeah. He's basically Hotel California. You can come anytime you like, but you cannot leave. You can't. You don't know when he's going to leave.
That's the curse of it.
Yeah,
it's this randomized curse that is bestowed upon you, probably from something you did in your past life. I really don't think I've done anything this bad this time, but I must have been Jack the Ripper before this.
But, okay, admit it. It is entertaining for the entire week.
Yes, that this is what we're saying. It's like, it's equal parts funny, equal parts nasty. You know what he is? He's a human bucket of KFC.
Yeah, that after he leaves, you need to go through a detox.
And it is. It pretty much is because, yeah, the whole time he's there, you're eating KFC.
Yeah, in which you are. Because
I don't know how he convinces you to do it every time.
Every time. The time when you, me, and Dome King used to hang out, our diet was solely KFC.
Yep, streetwise combo. I remember the peak.
Every other day. It was insane. It was batshit crazy.
4 times a week, sometimes for breakfast. Look, it was a shameful part of my life. I don't want to relive it.
Having said that, can we have KFC after this pod?
Yes. But the point is, it's $9 for 9 piece.
It's a 2 day. Yeah.
But he comes to my house. First of all, that morning, I had to wake him up. I can't remember why. He had no shirt on. It's very hard to wake him up because he looks and sleeps as much as Snorlax does. And he gets up, he walks outside, it's first thing in the morning, he pumps a durry and drinks a can of V, like downs the can of V. It's the first thing in the morning. Anyway, he starts scratching his stomach like really pleased and then goes, ugh. Bash. That's the base of this cake.
That's the base.
This is not the icing. This isn't a cherry.
One time, he was. This was when he was pretty much living with me.
Yeah.
And he didn't tell his parents he's living with me. And he was just like, I just work 24 hours a day. He's sleeping in my room. Now, these were the days when I was at law school and I was studying for some exam. So I was awake. So he goes to sleep after like punching maybe 45 hits. He goes to sleep at like, because sometimes he just collapses, right? Like his bong would be in his hand and he's asleep.
That's how he sleeps. That's his version of how some people have to listen to the radio to go to sleep.
So you have to take it. You have to pick up the bong, keep it on the table, and then put like the blanket over him. And then I'm studying. It's like, and he's been sleeping. He's been sleeping for about 4 to 5 hours at this point.
Right.
For some reason, he wakes up. He forgets that I... He doesn't know that I'm awake. He gets up. He loads up another bong hit.
Yeah.
He's sleepy as fuck. He punches the shit out of it. And then he realizes that I'm in the room and I'm probably awake. And then he looks at me with a very ashamed look. And then he puts the bong back and he goes back to sleep. And then... Wait, 1 second. It doesn't end there. And then...
Dude, you can't. And then... You gotta give me a break.
And then he realizes... that my cover's been blown. He's seen me, like, get up in the middle of the night to punch another one. He's like, I'm gonna do another one. He gets up again, he punches another one, and then he goes to bed. It's like, I was like, dude, you're a champ. And to this day, I don't know where his embarrassment came from. From the fact that he basically got up in the middle of the night, where usually most people think, maybe I should take a piss. He decides, maybe I should punch a bong. Or from the fact that he was smoking my weed. I don't know where that embarrassment stems from, but either way, it was very funny. So.
Ali. You're killing me. I didn't want it to end this way.
Okay, so he's at your house. Jesus. For about 4 days now. He wakes up in the morning.
That was the morning precursor, yeah. Anyway.
So he
as always, the pretty much this is... Sorry, I just figured out the way that you get him to move on. This is how you break the curse of the Dome King. You just say, I'm out of weed. He'll disappear in front of your eyes.
Yeah, that's actually... that's one of the only ways he will leave, actually. That's... You found the cheat.
That's pretty much it. You either have to get that or one of those bulldozers they use in factory farms to pick up sick cows.
Yeah.
You have to push him out like that. So he says, so he takes me to this place I need to go. We come back. There's no indication of him leaving because there was just a lot of weed at my house. And he says... And I was just saying, and then like it was just because after you're with someone for 4 days straight, you run out of things to say. And so he just turns to me, and I'm gonna have to use it in the voice, even though I know our audience hates it. But just for authenticity's purpose, the rest of this story is gonna be in the voice that he always talks in. So he goes, "Oh man, have you ever got your dick sucked by a guy?" He's fully heterosexual. I say no. Have you? And he goes, "Yeah, man." And so good. You're gonna have to tell me this story. Start from the very beginning of this. And he goes, Again, no shirt. Still no shirt. And I think this was the period of time when he was wearing a bandana. So he was just really into Tommy Sotomayor. So he was just always dressing as one of those, like, hood black guys that's always just, like, trying to look thug but doesn't have enough money to look thug like you see on TV. Just that footage that you see in Atlanta of, like, there was a brawl in the middle of the street, man, and there's just, like, some guys with bandanas on, some guys with belts on and baggy jeans. He dressed like that for a while. He's half Asian, half white. He can't pull off that look. He just looks stupid and funny. And so he's sitting there like that. We're sitting on my porch. I say, "No, what happened?" He goes, "It was New Year's, and I take 7 tabs of acid." And I said, "7 tabs?" And he goes, "At least." "7 tabs of acid." There is a reason that this man spends most of his life in a room like Glenn Beck writing verses of the Bible on a chalkboard. And because he woke a Ferk. And so he so I go in New Year's, I had 7 tabs of acid, and I was making out with this chick. And she wasn't hot at all. And, and we're at the back of her house, and she says, come into this room. There's an orgy going down in there. And I say, yay. And so I walk into the room, and I realized that she the hottest person in that room by a mile.
Fucking a bunch of ugly people. At once. It's just hell. He walked into hell. And there's like...
And he goes... And no. I said, what was the ratio like? I said, there was like... five guys and three chicks. Including that chick. So he was the sixth guy. It was 2-1. He says, I want to get out of here, man. Like, you turn into a fetal baby to that woman. Go, I want to get out of here, man. And she say, oh, it's good once you get involved. But she didn't understand that the reason I didn't want to go in there isn't because it was an orgy. It's because everyone was ugly. And so he goes in.
Gather yourself, he goes
in. He goes in. He's sitting in the corner, really sad, watching this, like, basically, like, ode to Satanism happen in front of him. It must have been such a disturbing sight. And he's really high on acid. And this guy crawls up to him and says, have you ever had your dick sucked by a guy? And he says, no. And so he starts sucking his cock. And I said, how did that feel? And he said, quote, it felt exactly how you'd imagine a guy sucking your cock. And then, Jesus, it's like silence. I don't know what to say. I'm trying really hard not to laugh because of how sad he looks. And keep in mind, he's still dressed like some ghetto hood rat while saying this story. And looking, I've never seen him look so forlorn. So there's like a pause after him saying that line of maybe like 30 seconds where no one says anything. He says, I think I'm gonna go, man. That was the end of the 4J bit.
This pod has to end now.
That's the end.
There's no way we can stop this.
Tune into the extra edition. Become a Patreon member where you can listen to something of substance. But as if you need any more. Honestly, I don't blame you if you don't pay us anymore. Frankly, I don't care.
I will die a content person. But yeah, donate to us and listen to exclusive shit that might come after. Or may not, depending on how hungry we are at the moment. See ya.
See ya.